Good morning and Shavua Tov. Sorry.
Morning.
Sorry.
Well,
Hi.
thanks so much.
So, is everybody up to speed about what we're doing today in the next few weeks?
We all know that it's brachiyavot, and I have my barbanel right here.
Okay, very good. All right, great. Who is that? Whose edition is that?
It's from Avram Shill or
Oh, yeah, right. I tried to reach out to him, but I wasn't able to. So the reason that we're doing this, I just wanted to give a little bit of background. The reason we're doing this is because of a few reasons. First of all, a few questions came up due to the different topics we started to touch on. And some of them insinuated, Olam Haba and Tchiyat HaMetim, and questions were raised by some of you about what Abarbanel thinks about those topics. I thought that's a great opportunity to try and touch on those topics from not from the his Pirush on the Torah, but from his Pirush on Pirkei Avot. And we're reaching now that we're starting Sefer Vayikra. I thought, Sefer Vayikra might be less intriguing for some of you in terms of what Abarbanel's perspectives are on the Mishkan. And maybe you'd find more value in this, because this is really a long journey that he takes us through the Mishnah in Perek Revi'i, the Mishnah Kafchet, the Mishnah Kaftet of Rabbi Elazar HaKapar. So I hope you have some Pirkei Avot, maybe some translations. You're more than welcome to.
In other
What?
editions, this is 422. In this edition, it's 417.
Yeah, so I do realize there's some discrepancies and differences, and that I should have checked before. You're right. There are a few. It in different versions, it's in different prakim, but it is the Mishnah of Rabbi Elazar HaKapar. There's very few mentioning of this Tana. He was a very well-respected Tana, and Abarbanel, you'll see in a minute, admires him very, very much. A few reasons why he's called HaKapar. So we know of a few other Tanaim that are called Asandlar and other Miktzot, other professions that the Tanaim had. Kapar could mean a few things. One of them is that he used to prepare tar, things from tar, or like from in Aramit, it's kofar. Maybe his profession was making wine from a vegetable, from a plant called tzalaf. And in those days, they called it kapar or kaparas. And they say maybe it's also because he came from a certain place that resembled the name kapar, which is kapira. So even though we know very little about Rabbi Elazar HaKapar, we do know a lot about some of the things that he stood for, some things that he believed in through other places where he's mentioned, other stories about Tanaim. He did not like and did not respect people who were Nezirim. He thought that people should live in this life, not be monks, but live and dwell in this life, enjoy the world that God gave you and your body, obviously, and everything within heter and in the kosher means, but to do everything in the right way, very much against being proud of for any reason whatsoever. He loved Eretz Yisrael. There's certain everything that I'm saying now are things that he insinuated through different sayings that he said. And he saw peace as the most unbelievable virtue on the top of the chain of values in this world, and that obviously we know en kli machzik bracha la shalom, but he really believed that peace is a very important thing to strive for. So it's also important to understand these things before we dive into what he says in Pirkei Avot. What else? He's buried here in Eretz Yisrael in a place I think not far from Carmiel. So if you find his Mishnah extremely intriguing and you want to see where he's buried as well after we're done, maybe we could do a field trip up to his up to the Me'arah where he's claimed to be buried. So if you're all ready, we'll talk more about other things that he said about what a person should be and how he should look at life. But from this Mishnah, it's very, very indicative, I would say, of who he was to see what a Tana says and what he was known for. He probably was an extremely deep thinker and a philosopher and a very spiritual person. So let's start reading. Maybe we'll let you read the Mishnah or the English translation. I'll read the Hebrew. Maybe Bruce or someone else can read the English translation. Is that okay?
Yeah, let's just do the English. We'll
So go. So
save some
go for it.
time. Rabbi
Okay.
Elazar HaKapar said, jealousy, lust, and the desire for honor drive a man from the world. And he used to say, they that have been born will die, and they that are dead will be resurrected. and they that live will be judged, to know and to make known and be convinced that he, meaning God, is God, because God is the maker, he's the creator, he's the discerner, he's the witness, he's the judge, he is the complainant, and it is he that shall judge, in whose presence is neither guile nor forgetfulness, nor respect of persons, nor taking of bribes, for all belongs to him. And know that everything is according to the reckoning, and let not your nature promise you that the grave will be your refuge, because against your will you were created, and against your will you were born, and against your will you live, and against your will you die, and against your will you'll have to give account and reckoning before the King of Kings, the Holy and Blessed Be He.
Very, very beautiful. Thank you, Bruce. Anyone, if anyone have anything that pops up or any questions that you have in terms of the language or the setting of this whole
It seems to me that this statement of you're created by against your will, you're born against your will, you live against your will, you die against your will. Where's the, how I say it, the positive element of this?
So I found that the Rebbe Milubavitch said around this topic of why that would trouble, and it's very legitimate for it to trouble you. But the thing is that a spirit is very comfortable in remaining a spirit, remaining a neshama, remaining in a spiritual existence. But God has a plan for the spirit to grow and to change and to evolve. And the only way for it to grow is through going down to this world on earth. And if that's God's will, even though the neshama prefers not to come down here, it's God's will, and God's will is good, and therefore I want it. It doesn't mean that neshama should also want it. Neshama, naturally, from her mere existence and her mere virtues of what it is, does not want this battle with the body and the earthly challenges.
I have a Likute Tzichot from the Rebbe, which talks about his commentary on this, that if you do 1,000 mitzvot but one evil act, the goodness will not cancel the evil act per se, and therefore we have to understand a reckoning is made, which highlights the importance of tshuva, because no one can ever really, meet this bar of doing all these mitzvot, and yet one of error blocks them out. So tshuva, therefore, is the name of the game.
Okay. He says, by the way, the Rebbe Milubavitch says that coming down here is almost like for the sake, right? It's not almost, it is for the sake of going up. And if you know that that's God's will, I'm just repeating what I said before, but that's why he was very much against monks, people who are preventing themselves from things in this world, even though they're allowed to you, because God wanted you to be in this world. And this world was not made for you to detach or to disassociate yourself from it. And people who disassociate themselves from this life are going against God's plan.
Why is it none of this written down in the Tanakh? It's all people's opinions. There's no black and white what the whole story is about.
That's an excellent question about why it's not written explicitly in the Torah and the Chumash. There are hints and insinuations in the Chumash about the afterlife, but some people claim, I've read answers that say that it's because it's so evident, it was so obvious, and they came out of Mitzrayim, and the Mitzrayim, the afterlife, was so obvious that it exists. There was no need to even, discuss it bluntly. And to make it clear, it's almost like, saying that the sun shines. That's one answer. But obviously, to me, that's not a sufficient answer enough for me.
What I'd be suggesting is that the Torah Shebek Tav was first. Why isn't it in there? We've had a lot of Mavi Weinstein that suggests that the Torah Shebek Tav, that actually was first. And these writings are reflections of that. And the Torah Shebiktav is almost like the monarch notes to the Torah Shebaal Peh. So this is a Mishnah. So this really trumps anything. And the Shebiktav has stories that one might say this is like an asmachta, so to speak. You learn the halacha from a Mishnah, and then you look for a verse that seems to support. I think what Avi might be saying is when you read Tanakh in general, there's not a lot of emphasis on or stories about mitzvot.
Because maybe also another reason, and we'll see what Abarbanel says in a minute, but another reason could be that it's so profound and so mysterious and so removed from us. The idea that we can start getting explicit insinuations and what really happens after death and what it means to be a spirit and all. It's just stuff that remains to stay the way it is, the way it is, the way it was brought down to us. And like you said, Bruce, the Torah Shebaal Peh is so powerful and prominent and dominant. And this is what Abarbanel is going to say also about what Rabbi Elazar HaKapar is giving us. By the way, some people say it's Rabbi Eliezer HaKapar. It's just as powerful as if it would be written in Chamisha Chumshei Torah. This is part of the oral tradition that was passed from generation to generation, and one of them is this as well. So Abarbanel claims that the fact that Rabbi Elazar HaKapar is the one who brings this down to us just shows us and demonstrates to us how tremendously wise he was, how deep and profound he was, how amazingly profound the Kabbalah that he had, the receiving, what he himself received in the secrets of the Torah, and its foundations are tremendous. V'kasher karati lema'avai, and this is very beautiful. Abarbanel says, listen carefully to what he says. V'kasher karati lema'avai, when I called my beloved, my loved ones, who does he mean? The other commentators, the wise commentators, other chachamim, ladat im tat kavanato, for me to understand what Rabbi Lazar really means, he says in two words, hema rimuni, they cheated me. How, I mean, I got the chills just reading this, because he says, I've read every single pirush of all the wise mefarshim before, and after reading them, I feel that I'm cheated. They're not giving me the deep, profound meaning of what Rabbi Elazar HaKapar is really saying, because they didn't go down to the depths of his ideas, to the objective of what he was trying to teach us, to the goals. Vehem, vegamhem, nitchalfu be'atzmam ze mizeh, and they're polar opposites from each other. From the Rambam, he says, from the other Mefarshim, and in order to bring down a better understanding, a more truth, whole, complete understanding, in order for us to understand things better, Abarbanel is going to do what he's very good at, and that's asking the questions, asking the good questions, and afterwards he says, I'm going to bring you my answers, and then you're going to understand the true depth of what Rabbi Elazar HaKapar is teaching us. So buckle up. We're going to start with a question.
In just 1 second. I always like to know, you know, who's speaking and when they're speaking. And he's speaking between the first and second century CE. There were battles among Jewish factions on the ideas that he's mentioning. And he's being recorded by the sages that inherited the tradition from the Perushim, would certainly be even in a Tachir HaMetim, Olam Haba, and that story that we take so much for granted was very much up in the air at that century, and it wasn't clear, you know, and so he's on the team that believes in this 100%, and that's why he's teaching it. Other Jewish
my question to you, Bruce, is why wait till the fourth chapter? Pirkei Avot to say it's so fundamental. If what you're saying is so,
he's not. This book is not written in real time. The book is being recorded in the year 500. The question on them is, why did they redact Pirkei Avot in this style to record these things? Obviously, if you would read about rabbis today, the Lubavitcher Rebbe and the different Rosh Yeshivas and the Haredi Gedolim and Rabbi Riskin, and you can pick what you think is important that they said. If you know the end result of where you want to go with the teaching. So we have no idea who said exactly what when. This is a reconstructed discussion that we're surmising he said in this century. Many people may have said the same thing generations before or after, just in the chain of what they want to extract and make a point. They're saying that he said this now because perhaps at that time That was the biggest machloket in his
I
genre.
agree. I agree 100%. It's very good that you set the stage for that because it's very important to understand the background of why this was said. I'm still puzzled how fundamentalism won. And right, and on the other end, this is put like in the middle of the Pirik, right? It's just in the middle of the Pirik Revi'i. But you're right. This wasn't composed or edited right when he said it. But let's see. Maybe Abarbanel will touch on that as well. So the first question he says: why choose these three virtues, these three characteristics? First of all, there are many bad negative characteristics, and second of all, they're not a chain or evolution of one from each other. So why these three? Kina, right? Jealousy, tava, lust, and honor. Why these three dafka? The second question is why? What does it mean? Motzinit adam min haolam? What does it mean? Do these things extract us and take us out of this world of earth or out of the world to come? Right? So how would these things be legitimate to say that they are the ones who bring death? Are you talking about a bodily death? Right? Hayiludim lamut. He talks about the fact that because in the beginning he talks about the fact that afterwards, sorry, after the kinat tava kavo, he talks about the fact that those who were born were meant to die. And if you're talking about Olam Haba, how does that intertwine with each other? Doesn't make sense. The third question is, Hayiludim lamut, kima chidush. There's no chidush. We know the people who are born are bound to die at once someday. So why bring this in a Mishnah? Why is it part of this evolution of stuff that Rabbi Elazar Kapal is trying to teach us? What's the chidush? Ve'od ki lama amar hayiludim lamut ki ilu eino nolad ki im lo oto tachlit. Right, it's a little bizarre. He says, Abarbanel, we were not born to die. We're born, and one of the side effects of living, having a bodily life, is the fact that there's wear and tear, and at the end, right, at some point you die. But that's not the goal or objective of life, of birth, is to die. And that's a very good question about why put it in that way. It's a very negative way to put it. Ha-philosoph, and when he says ha-philosoph, he means Aristotle. Sha-mavet u-sof ve-lo tachlit, right? It's just the end of this life on this earth, at this station. It's not the goal. Okay, he's just repeating it from the sense of the philosopher of Aristotle. So there are 10 questions. The fourth question is v'hamitim le'achayot, right? Is it really that there's olam haneshamot that you go to, right? So you relive in this world of spirits, or that there will be at some point in history where there'll be some sort of awakening of the dead from the graves, right? And then they're going to come back to life. So we have to understand what that means. V'hamitim lechayot, right? Like he said, lamut. So it means really that the dead people will come back to life, resurrect. Lo shiomar lehachayot shupol al derech lamit. So the language here.
The Abarbanel was a fan of coming back in life with the body, living a regular life with all the senses. Again, there was a malchoket even among Jews. For certain Christians of his day, they had a different idea of what resurrection meant, and the Abarbanel had a very definite opinion on what this means. That we're going to come back to life in the body that we left with. I mean, this whole machloket, like. If the body is resurrected, when it's a young man, when it's an old man, with clothes, without clothes, I mean, there's a whole discussion
Correct,
about that.
correct, correct, correct. And yeah, he definitely believed that that's true. I mean, today with genetic engineering and everything that we can do from genes, from what we have today in today's science, it doesn't make it so far-fetched that you could take a cell from a bone or from a dead body and make that human being, live again. Does he come as a baby? Does he come as an adult? We'll see soon what Abarbanel says about that. I think he has a very far-reaching concept of Tchiyat Hamitim. He does say at some point that he wrote a complete book, a whole full book about Tchiyat Hamitim that got lost through his journeys from country to country. And here he's going to try and rewrite and remember everything that he wrote when he did have all the books, and he was settled quietly in Spain at the time. So we'll see what he thinks about that. But Bruce, thank you for mentioning that. So that's the fourth question. Fifth question, V'achayim lidon, right? Are we talking about Yom HaDin that's going to be in Tchiyat HaMitim? When exactly are we talking about? We know Rosh Hashanah is a Yom HaDin. Okay, I'm not going to go through every single question. I'm not going to go through the complete question that he gives. It's just important to touch on these briefly and move on because we really want to dive into his answers. The sixth question, Lida Velehodia Velehodlevada, right? Are you talking about God that is about to reappear in the world? What kind of language are we talking about here exactly? Shelo zachar Hashem HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'shalav. Is it that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to reveal himself? In what way is he going to reveal himself? Is it the dead people that are going to reveal themselves? The life, the living? The language here is very tough on the Abarbanel and many other commentators, and obviously he's mentioning that as well. He brings Yirmiyahu here, the Navi, Ki kulam yid'u oti mikotnam ve'ad godlam. Maybe it's going to be a point of history where nobody's going to need to teach anybody. Things are going to be so evident and obvious and clear. You won't need a teacher or a rabbi or anything else because the presence of God will be very, very apparent. And he brings the Rav Matityahu. He says, what Rav Matityahu does with this question, he says, Hevel is complete fallacy. Seventh question, Shehu El, Hu HaYotzer, Hu HaBore, Umi Lo Yada Bechol Ele Shehu El. Again, things here are very obvious, and that bothers the Abarbanel, that the Mishnah brings things that are obvious in a way that Tzki'ilu, it's a chidush or something new. Shehakol Modim B'metziut Tzibah Rishonah Lechol HaDvarim, most, the majority of humankind. Also, I sent Bruce last night a survey that was done a few years ago in America. 70-something percent, I think it was, of people believe that there's heaven and hell and there's a God. The majority of humanity believes in that. What's the point of mentioning that there's a God, a creator to the world? What's the point of using two words that talk about creation? Again, he brings another pirush that he doesn't like. I'm going to continue. We have two more questions. Three more questions. The eighth question, Mashama, Hu Adayan, Hu Atid Lidon, God will judge you, right? If it's about Yom HaDin Bizman HaTchiyah, again, he's bothered when exactly this Yom HaDin going to happen. What's the point of saying it again? Hu Atid Lidon, Haim Yesh Din Acher? Is there another? Well, okay, we know he's going to judge, but there's going to be Hu Atid, there's another judgment after the judgment day. So again, Abarbanel wants us to dive deep into the understanding of what these things mean. Ninth question, Shein lefanav lo maso panim velo mikach shochad. God doesn't take bribery. He doesn't change his opinion because of anything. Kikmo shama Rambam, mehashtut hu sheuchak mehashem ashelo yitzuar velo yidume bo. Ki ech yinaten lo, how can you give God bribery? What does it mean to give God bribery? It's a foolish thing to even think that. All right. And he brings here a whole long story about other opinions in that matter. Tenth question is Ve'al yavtichecha yitzrecha lomar sheyesh bishol beit manos lach. Don't let your bad yetzer inclination tell you that death is the end of everything, and that's your escape from the troubles of life. Shal kochecha ta notzar, because you're born against your will and you die against your will. And kochecha ta atid lidanim lechesbon. Ve'yakshei, says Abarbanel, if the security that you get, the confidence that you get from your yetzer, that the death is the end and complete end of everything, and there's nothing afterwards, kilu kafa b'chol ma she'nemar lemala, because you're in conflict what you said before, the hamitim la'chayot v'achayim lidon, right? There is judgment day. The dead will relive. That there is life after death. Ma ta'ana asa kenegdo. Okay, so he's showing the conflict within the Mishnah itself, from different aspects. Okay. So let's start diving into the answers. V'raiti mishi peresh, he says, Hayeludim lamut is against the kin'ah. So here he's going to show how different elements, before we get into the actual resurrection and life after death, he's going to first of all show how this Mishnah is built, how it's constructed. So the first thing that he says, Hayeludim lamut. He says, I saw somebody who said, and this down here in the Maharot, it says it's Rabbi Yavetz, who says Yeludim Lamut is against your jealousy. Misha ta mitkanelo sofo lamut v'yazov la'acherim. Meaning, if you're jealous and somebody else having something that you don't have, don't worry, he's going to die like you'll die, and he won't be able to take with him anything to the next world. If you have lust, know that the dead themselves, they'll live in the next world. And against the honor, he brought v'achayim lidon. What's the point of life, of human beings chasing after honor? Because hakol b'mishpat, if you deserve the honor, you'll get it and you'll sit in a seat that's worthy of your stature. But if you're not worthy of it, then you won't sit in that seat. V'im lo zachita lechavod ha'olam hazeh, and if ha'olam hazeh, maybe you did deserve it, you didn't get it, you'll be privileged in the next world, in the spiritual world. Kisham elyonim lemata v'techtonim lemata. There's a famous Gemara of one of the sages who was there in the Olam Haba and came down, and he said, I saw a complete opposite world where the people here that are glorious and proud and triumphant, they're on the bottom of the lowest part of the food chain, up in the spiritual world, and vice versa. Okay, I don't want to go into every single point of these issues because I want to get faster to the issue of the of Tchiyat HaMitim. So now he says, listen to what I have to tell you, and no one learn. Just like in the previous chapters in this Masechet Avot, in the end of the Perek, the Rabbi Yehuda Anasi brought a Mishnah achat, she'e mishpata kolel drushei haperek orubam. Every time at the end of the Perek, Rabbi Yehuda Anasi made sure, like Bruce said, this was composed and written and edited late in the late. It wasn't done in real time. He says the Barbanel. Kacha b'sof ze haperek, and that's why here in Sof Perek Revi'i, he brought Rabbi Elazar HaKapar for that exact purpose, in order for us to understand things that said people Tanaim like Ben Zoma. Right, lo binyan chokhmah shera shalav in losif menu ven ligo, aval b'shlosha acherot. Rabbi Zoma said, "Ma gibor, who is the gibor? The person who overcomes his yetzer, and who is the wealthy person? Is the person who is happy with his portion, and who is the honored person? Is the person who honors others." And this is why this specific part of Rabbi Elazar Kapar says, "Shekasher lo yezek keben adam hinei pol beraat hamutarot." If you act not like a human being, you will fall and stumble and fall in every single ditch of life because you don't understand the real pure perspective of the way you should live.
I also don't know if he's looking under the travails of the Roman occupation, what's going on, how bad things were here in the land of Israel. But it could be terrible. You know, imagine living in the Ukraine today, where if things are just falling apart all around you, and how do you maintain your humanity, your ethics, your Judaism? How do you behave in a world like that, where everything is falling apart, and who lives, who dies, and all these existential questions? But the question is also, how do you live your life? How do you conduct yourself in an honest way with people all around you that are, and everyone's in trouble?
Yeah. Okay, so we'll stop here. Next week we'll dive straight into his opinions on Tchiyat HaMitim. Shavua tov, mevorach to all.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Benny. Thanks. Much appreciated for cutting
Thank
short
you.
The program. Thank you. Oh, by the way, so next Sunday, Monday, there's no shir. It'll be Purim. Right, Rav Golan. So next week.
Okay. Boker tov. Shavua tov.
Shavua tov.
It's our last show before.